and welcome back to another episode of the show. That's right, from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and the theme for today's show is vibes over substance, a cultural examination. Boy, it's been a minute since we've done one of these. It's been a minute since we've done an episode of People Pleaser. I might be a little bit rusty. I had what they call the creator fatigue, the burnout. It's real. I got on a real hot streak in January, like January through February, and I was like posting every day, and I had new YouTube exclusive videos like every week, and I had new episodes of the podcast every week, and I was really cooking, and my content on TikTok was cooking. We're here with the TikTok Digital Studio audience. Shout out TikTok Digital Studio audience. What's up, everybody? I just hit a wall, dude. I went out of town to shoot a movie in Georgia, and I was gone for a few weeks because I also had to like work on some projects that I was doing in Salt Lake. And I thought, once I get back to LA, I'll get right back into the swing of things. And I didn't. I came back into town and I just was like, every time I thought about sitting down to do an episode of the show or to do another YouTube exclusive content video or to do a TikTok, I was like sick to my stomach about it. There's something about the state of the world right now that it's hard for me to keep the energy up because the deluge of terrible news on a day-to-day basis, it just sort of wears you down. And I don't know, like having to figure out a clever way in and an interesting way in and a funny way in or a new perspective in. Sometimes you just kind of go, I don't know. It sucks. It's bad. That's my take. It's bad. People would be in my comments. People would be in my DMs and be like, have you seen this? Did you see this? Did you see this thing that he said? Have you seen this thing that he posted on Truth Social today? Did you hear about this story? How come you're not talking about this story? And I'd be like, my take on it is it sucks. It's bad. Yes, I saw it and I hate it. I hate it just as much as you hate it. And I'm tired, but I'm back now. I'm trying to get back into the swing of things. I've made a few videos on YouTube or on TikTok that are doing all right. We're back with the podcast. Let's get into the theme of the show today. There's something that's been coming up a lot for me in the last several weeks, in my, the way that I'm engaging with friends and family members, the way that I'm engaging with people online, there's like this theme that's coming up and this thing that I keep seeing. And basically what I want to talk about today is Frank Grimes. Okay, I got Frank Grimes on my mind grapes. If you don't know who Frank Grimes is a character from an episode of The Simpsons, season 8, episode 23. It's an episode called Homer's Enemy. This episode came out in 1997. If you've never seen this episode of the show, watch The Simpsons. Watch the first 13 seasons of The Simpsons. Get Disney Plus and watch like at least the first 13 seasons. It's some of the best television ever made. But Frank Grimes is a character who shows up in Springfield and he starts working at the power plant with Homer Simpson. And Frank Grimes is like, it's like for the first time in the history of this show, 8 seasons in. Also, how crazy is season 8, episode 23? How crazy is that? That like seasons of television used to have like 25 episodes per season. and they've been doing this show almost my entire life. It's crazy how many episodes of The Simpsons have been written. But Frank Grimes came in and he's like one of the first characters to identify that how deeply messed up it is that Homer Simpson is as successful as he is. That Homer, like a big joke on the show is that Homer Simpson is allowed to have this very high stakes job at the nuclear power facility that powers the entire town. Like if Homer fucks up at work, there could be a nuclear meltdown and there could be a massive ecological disaster on the scale of Chernobyl. And it's entrusted to someone as inept as Homer Simpson. And that's kind of a major joke of the show. It's also a joke on the ineptitude of the ruling class because Montgomery Burns is so inept that he has no idea how unqualified his employees are and how unqualified the people he's entrusted with, you know, overseeing his power plant are. And Frank Grimes is kind of like this character who almost represents the writers of the show sort of stepping in and being like, you know what? I just want to say actually, it's so ridiculous and deeply fucked up and unfair that this guy is just allowed to fart and burp his way through life, and that he just skates by, and he's got a beautiful wife, and he's got a family who loves him, and he's got a really big house, and he's got like two cars and a big backyard and friends and this really nice job. And Frank Grimes is a character who he's a really smart guy and a guy who's worked really hard in his life, and his life just kind of sucks. Like, things just haven't really worked out for him. As he says in the show, he lives in a one-bedroom apartment similar to me, but Frank Grimes lives in a one-bedroom apartment that is above a bowling alley and below another bowling alley.
How in the world can you afford to live in a house like this, Simpson?
I don't know. Don't ask me how the economy works.
Yeah, but look at the size of this place. I live in a single room above a bowling alley and below another bowling alley.
Wow.
I don't know. Like, I kind of was thinking today, like, justice for Frank Grimes. We don't talk about it enough. Frank Grimes deserves our respect, and he deserves justice, because Frank Grimes was right. Don't get me wrong. Like I said, The Simpsons is one of the greatest TV shows ever written. Homer Simpson is a fantastically funny character. I like Homer Simpson. I like Dan Castellaneta. I love the voice acting on that show. It's a classic show. But let's be honest. Homer Simpson is a terrible person. He's an awful person. Sure, he has some redeeming qualities, but do the redeeming qualities outweigh the fact that he is like a violent alcoholic who constantly neglects his family, who constantly neglects his marriage, who constantly fails to show up for his life partner because he's too busy being down at Moe's getting blackout drunk, who's constantly driving drunk and putting the people in his community at risk because of his brazen, you know, reckless alcoholism, who, like, once per episode, it is a running joke throughout the entire history of this series that this man is physically abusive to his 10-year-old son. It's just a running joke on the show that he chokes out his 10-year-old son once per episode. Now, is Bart kind of a little butt face and a little pill? Absolutely. And yeah, I just used the word pill. What am I, 75? I don't know. Who knows? Who cares? You know, could you say that maybe Bart has it coming sometimes? No, you couldn't. There is nothing that a 10-year-old boy can do that warrants his alcoholic father physically choking him. And obviously, I get it that, like, The Simpsons is, it's part of the joke that Homer is this deeply flawed person who just sort of skates through life. That's the point of the episode, Homer's Enemy. That's the point of introducing the character Frank Grimes, because he's here to go, what the fuck is going on here? This man is asleep behind the wheel at work every single day. Is drunk every single night, has a wife who is fiercely devoted to him, despite the fact that he is just the worst husband, who's constantly neglecting her, constantly forgetting about her, constantly failing to show up for her, and, you know, is regularly physically assaulting and abusing his child. And yet, he never gets fired. He never experiences any consequences for his bad behavior. He's got a group of friends who love him and, like, a really strong community that regularly rallies around him. And he kind of just skates by. The reason why the episode of the show is called Vibes Over Substance is I feel like, it's crazy to me that this episode came out in 1997. It's almost 30 years old, this episode. And I feel like what the writers were expressing through Frank Grimes is their own feeling at that time in the entertainment industry, that they were witnessing people with, you know, less talent than them, or people with, like, maybe less intellectual book smarts than them, who were just doing so much better, who were making so much money, who were making so much more money and doing so much better in the public eye and, you know, getting platformed in such a bigger way. And they were kind of like skating by on sheer riz alone. You know, they were witnessing like the rise of just sort of like, you know, being part of an era that was like the rise of bubblegum pop, where you had acts like NSYNC, no shade to NSYNC or the Backstreet Boys, okay? No shade to like the rise of boy band culture, 98 Degrees, LFO. I was a kid when this was all happening, and I still fuck with those albums and those songs, and I still rock with a lot of those dudes, all right, all these years later. But, like, let's not kid ourselves. These writers were raised with, you know, in an era where there were, like, songwriters like Bob Dylan and Neil Young who could really have like a big audience and sell out stadiums and stuff. And that wasn't happening in the 90s. There was sort of this culture that was taking over where it was like, actually just having vibes is better. If you have kind of songs that are written by committee for you by a group of corporate funded, you know, songwriters and producers who are just like, the idea here is to get a bunch of good looking teenage boys, put them in a group, write a bunch of songs for them that are going to appeal to teenage girls, make a bunch of music videos that are going to sell the sex appeal of these teenage boys to the girls, and then we'll all make money. There's not really like a heart behind it or a soul behind it. It's just about like vibes over substance. It's just about being cool and selling what's cool. And I think that this was like, you know, a bunch of like Harvard grads who were writing on the Simpsons staff who all wrote for, you know, the Harvard Lampoon, who had never been really considered cool or considered people with riz in their lives, speaking through Frank Grimes and going like, sure, it's cool that we all landed good writing jobs at a good TV show. We're all doing just fine. But God, isn't it crazy that we have a culture that just kind of worships the aesthetic of just cool vibes 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times more than it values people who actually are bringing substance to the world of art and, you know, media and storytelling. And I feel like, you know, almost 30 years later, this is still very relevant, you know? I really still empathize with Frank Grimes' dilemma here. By the way, the episode ends with Frank Grimes kind of losing his mind because he just can't, like, Frank Grimes tries to sabotage Homer Simpson by tricking Homer into entering a contest that's intended for children. God, I should have closed my window. The loudest plane ever flying over my house right now. I live by the Burbank Airport, and again, I'm Frank Grimes. I live in a one-bedroom apartment that is in the pathway of the Burbank Airport, and I constantly have planes flying over my apartment. But but like Frank tricks Homer into entering into this contest for children to humiliate Homer, but Homer winds up winning the contest because Mr. Burns is also an idiot who just kind of is like, I don't know, Martin. Martin enters the contest and he actually makes an amazing model of a nuclear power plant, and he loses to Homer, who makes this like really shitty, ugly model. But Mr. Burns just likes it more. There's just something about Homer's riz and Homer's energy that Mr. Burns just fucks with more than nerdy Martin. And it drives Frank Grimes crazy to the point that he accidentally kills himself by grabbing onto high voltage wires without wearing gloves, because he's, you know, doing this whole bit where he's like, I'm Homer Simpson. I don't need to care about safety equipment. I can just grab onto these wires. And Frank Grimes winds up dying because he's so pissed off about Homer's ability to skate by on vibes. And, you know, the weird thing is, even though I want justice for Frank Grimes and his plight, I also get it. I get why we like Homer more than we like Frank Grimes. Like, we all collectively want to watch a show about Homer Simpson more than we collectively want to watch a show about Frank Grimes. A lot of people in the comments on the TikTok digital studio audience are calling him Grimy. That's another part of the show, is Homer keeps calling him Grimy, even though Frank Grimes does not want to be called Grimy. And they even say it at his funeral. Reverend Lovejoy's like,
Frank Grimes, or Grimy as he liked to be called.
It's a great show, The Simpsons. But we would all prefer to, despite his many, many, many flaws, we would all prefer to watch a show about Homer Simpson than we would about Frank Grimes. Because even though Frank Grimes is right, and even though Frank Grimes is like a smarter person than Homer Simpson, and maybe a more disciplined person than Homer Simpson, and maybe a person who's on paper more deserving of success than Homer Simpson, we kind of find people like Frank Grimes, and maybe even people like Austin Archer, to be kind of grating. He's sort of just like a whiny complainer, and he's not as funny as Homer is. Homer's, despite all of his flaws, Homer seems like a good hang. Homer's chill. Homer's laid back. Homer, you know, can like, he's a guy you want to get a beer with. You know, how many times have you heard that phrase in American politics? Frank Grimes does not seem like a fun hang. He seems like he's too uptight and you know, too stressed out to be a good hang. So he doesn't have good vibes. He doesn't have as much riz. I don't know. I feel like I see this a lot in our cult. Even as I was saying this, I lost like 30 viewers in the TikTok digital studio audience. And I think people were like, nah, I'm not fucking with this. I'm not fucking with the vibes over here. And it kind of just, you know, proves what I'm talking about. But I see this in our modern culture all the time. You know, even though I have as many followers as I have, like I've got around 1.7 million followers across various social media platforms. And I kind of think that that's completely random. I think that like I got lucky, and then I think that it was sort of democratized in the fact that the people that the AI algorithm chose to show my content to, the people that it continues to choose to show my content to, they, for the most part, enough of them like what I'm doing to stick around. But it's nowhere near the levels of people like Jake and Logan Paul, of, you know, Joe Rogan, of Mr. Beast, like the kind of people, the kind of content creators, the kind of people who are in the business that I'm in that actually succeed to the point where they don't have to live in a one-bedroom apartment that's in the airstream of the Burbank Airport, where they can actually like afford nice houses and drive really nice cars and you know, like, and they're living high on the hog, are people who I believe that the content that they put out into the world and the art that they create has very little substance, but they just maybe have like better vibes than someone like me. They're just sort of, I don't know, like the majority of people think that they're cooler. And I don't know. Like I don't really know what the fix for it is. I do think that it is a cultural issue, and that's why, you know, this is a cultural examination, because I do think that there's just something about us generally where we can even see the validity in what Frank Grimes is saying and what I'm saying in this episode here, and we still kind of are like, yeah, but if you can make the vibes cool, that would be better for everyone involved, you know? How many times have you heard since Kamala Harris lost the election that we need a suitable alternative to Joe Rogan and the Paul brothers on the left, that we need someone cool? And then people will be like, we do have someone. We've got Hassan Piker. And sort of the insinuation is that everyone needs to deliver their content. Everyone on the left, all progressives, need to have the same kind of effortless riz and good looks as Hassan Piker. We all need to learn how to like speak the lingo of cool, laid back, chill debate bros, Twitch stream bros that Hassan Piker speaks. And I don't know, like I'm not going to be able to do it. I just don't have that energy. I have a much more like fast-talking, aggressive, annoying, grating Frank Grimes kind of energy, and that's just who I am. I'm not going to be able to like sit back and be like, bro, but why don't you fuck with Palestinians, bro? You should fuck with the Palestinian cause, dude. All based. But that's just not me. And I love that Hassan exists, and I love that he's as popular as he is. And I agree with his cause, and with the, you know, I do fuck with the Palestinians and their cause. And I do think that what Israel is doing is bad. And I'm on Hassan's team. I'm just not able to do it with as much riz and do it as cool as he can. But I think that like the fact that this keeps being the message that like, we got to figure out how to fix our vibes. We got to figure out how to be cooler. And I don't know, man, like, I don't know how to do it, is what I'm saying, I guess. Like, I don't necessarily disagree with it. The proof's in the pudding. The people with the better vibes seem to be winning. But I am who I am. I can only do it the way that I know how to, that I do it. I don't know how to do it any other way. I responded to a video today from this guy who was talking about how he unfollowed a leftist account, like a prominent leftist account. And he didn't say who it was. I wish he would have said who it was so I could have like known who he's talking about. But he basically said like, this is a creator that I have so much respect for. This person got me into TikTok. This person made me like really believe in TikTok as a meaningful tool for political activism, but I can't follow them anymore because their content has gotten increasingly angry. And it's just kind of turned into a series of angry rants. And basically what this guy was saying is like, even though I totally agree with this creator and totally agree that he makes salient points and that we're on the same team ideologically and we have all the same values and all the same goals, I don't like that the tone of his videos have just kind of gotten like mean and angry. I just wish that he would sort of talk in a more calm tone, I guess. I just wish that he would sort of tone it back. And I sort of, I mean, I responded to it in a way where, like, you know, hurt dogs holler, because I sort of felt like I fall into that category, that there might be a lot of people who are increasingly finding my content lately to be increasingly angry and maybe grating and maybe obnoxious, and maybe they want me to find a way to calm down and deliver the message in a more chill way. I responded to this guy because I was like, hey, listen, if the goal is to coalition build and community build, I don't think that we should be rejecting everyone because their vibe is off or because they're like, they're maybe more angry than we would like them to be. I personally feel like our current political reality calls for a little bit of righteous anger and justified anger. I kind of feel like if you're, you know, if you're not sufficiently angry right now, you might not be paying sufficient attention to what's going on. I think it makes sense to be really angry about hearing about people with legal documentation being blackbagged and disappeared to foreign prisons. I think it makes sense to be angry about people without legal documentation kidnapped and stolen from their families without due process. I think that everyone should be angry about that. I think that everyone should be angry about departments like DOGE coming in and just wantonly cutting the government budget, cutting things like Social Security and Medicaid, and saying that they're cutting, you know, fraudulent spending for things, just making shit up, being like, oh, we found $500 billion for a woke opera in Ireland. And it's like, what? What are you talking, a woke opera? What are you talking about? There is no opera in the world that operates on a budget that high. And what do you mean a woke opera? What are you talking about? They'll say things like, oh, we just cut funding for transgender mice. And their followers will be like, oh, good, yeah, we don't need to be funding transgender mice. Transgender mice, that's not a thing. That's, I mean, look, there might be transgender mice. We would have no way of knowing, but it was transgenic mice. They were doing research into transgenic mice, and the research was to try to cure cancer. It was cancer research. It makes sense to be mad about that stuff. It makes sense to be mad that the conservative ideology in the Republican Party has an ongoing campaign against empathy, where they're trying to make empathy a bad word and make empathy a sin and tell you that it's a bad, that Christians shouldn't be empathetic. And then at the same time, they all want us to feel really bad about Elon Musk's stock plummeting and about Tesla dealerships being vandalized. Like, they're like, oh, come on. What did he ever do? What did he ever do to anybody? I just think that there are a lot of things going on right now in the world that it makes sense to be angry about. And I think I just find it weird to be in this place where people are like, hey, look, if we're going to win, if we're going to do better, we got to like not be so angry. We got to try to not be so divisive. I can't tell you how many people over the last couple months have told me that my rhetoric is becoming too increasingly divisive, too angry, too messy, and that I need to tone it back. And I'm just like, maybe, I don't know, maybe there's a strategic advantage in there, but also I just want to be fucking honest. I just want to be honest about the way I feel. I feel like that's all I've ever done here. All I've ever done is honestly communicated my emotional state and my honest emotional reaction to things in the world. And I don't want to stop doing that. I don't want to like artificially try to turn myself into something that resembles someone who's more chill and someone who could be invited to be on Logan Paul's podcast and I could kind of shoot the shit and be accepted in that environment. I don't want to do that. I don't know. Like, I just want to keep doing what I do. And if that's not cool enough for the algorithm or cool enough for general audiences, I guess that's my bad. And I see this increasingly in sociopolitical discourse where people feel genuinely like you're actually winning an argument if you have a chiller aura. If you've got the chiller energy, then you're winning. I've been seeing this for years, that people online, and I feel like it's just like lowest common denominator debate bro comment trolls who consume comment, you know, debate content, and they're basically like, whoever gets more pressed, whoever's voice raises to a higher decibel, that person's automatically automatically losing. And I think it's just sort of this like academic failure of people not understanding what logical fallacies actually are. They kind of think that anytime there's a personal attack that enters into a debate at all, that's an ad hominem fallacy, and it means you lose automatically by the rules of debate. That's not what an ad hominem fallacy is. An ad hominem fallacy is when you replace a substantive argument with a personal attack. So if a person says, you know, the earth is flat, and I say, you're wrong because you're ugly, that's an ad hominem fallacy. I'm not responding to their assertion with a substantive refutation. I'm responding with a personal attack in place of a substantive refutation. However, if a person were to say the earth is flat and I were to say, no, the earth is an oblate spheroid, and we know this because of all of the available scientific data on the matter. In fact, you can just trust your own eyes. Next time you're in a plane, look out the window, you can see the curvature of the earth with your naked eyes. Next time you're on a boat, look out at the horizon line. The point at which it dips off, that is the point at which you are witnessing the curvature of the earth. You can see it with your naked eyes. You fucking dipshit. The fact that I add in the you fucking dipshit to the end of that does not invalidate everything I said before it. I have offered a substantive refutation of the position that the earth is flat, and then I have tacked on a personal attack at the end of it. That is not an ad hominem fallacy. But also similarly to that, like, people would feel like if the person who's arguing that the earth is flat is just chiller than me, if they're like, bro, I think the earth is flat, I think NASA's lying to us, and I go like, oh, you fucking idiot. No, they're not. Oh my God, all the available, like this has been settled science for so long now. It's insane that you don't know this. People would be like, whoa, bro's getting pressed. Bro's getting pressed. Look, bro's losing his shit. L for bro for getting pressed. And it's, I don't know. I just feel like I don't want to capitulate to these lowest common denominator morons who think that, like, if you get angrier than the other person, that means that you're losing the argument. Not only do I see this in the culture, I see this in my personal life. I have personally had conversations with friends and family members multiple times recently in the last few months where the person I'm talking to has used as their refutation to everything that I'm mad about has been like, see, you can't even talk about this without getting angry. You can't even talk about this without getting emotional. And I'm like, who the fuck cares? What does that mean? What do you mean by that? How is that? Like, I will say something like, oh my God, Elon Musk did a completely unambiguous Sieg Heil on the stage at the inauguration behind the presidential pulpit. This is not up for debate. This happened. We all witnessed it with our own eyes, and it has been replicated by several prominent conservatives since. He then went on to be a guest at a fucking Nazi rally in Germany. Like, he showed up at like the modern Nazi party and told them, you guys should not be ashamed about your Nazi history. Like, the dude is a Nazi. And I'll be talking about this with people and they'll be like, listen to the tone of your voice right now. You're really angry, dude. Like, it's crazy that you can't talk about this without remaining calm. And in my brain, it's fucking crazy that so many people can talk about it without losing their shit. It's so crazy how many people are able to witness what's going on in the world right now and just still be like, I don't know. I gotta like kind of lay back here and kind of see things from all angles here. Who's got the chillest aura right now? Who's got the chillest energy? Okay, but like, I don't know, like, how's your drip, bro? Like, I don't know, like, let's talk a little bit about, like, March Madness. Like, who'd you have in your bracket, bro? I don't know, dude. Like, it's, I just feel increasingly detached from this culture. I just don't understand what people want. I don't know, you know, like, in movies, in storytelling, in TV shows, in music, in social media content, increasingly I feel like the stuff that I gravitate towards, the stuff that I feel like is substantive and meaningful, is almost always orders of magnitude less popular than completely substanceless drivel that comes from people who seem to just resonate more on a straight, cool vibes level. And I don't know. Like, and if it's not the vibes thing, that people will argue, like, with material stuff. I had a friend who is no longer a friend of mine, who, you know, we got into an argument right after Elon Musk did the Sieg Heil salute on stage at the inauguration, because he's a friend of mine who I've known as a Trump supporter for years. And we've gone back and forth for years on different points. And we've always tried to, through it all, have a respect for the foundation of our friendship, that, like, when we first met each other, the foundation of our friendship was not based in politics. It was based in, like, a shared sense of humor. It was based in a shared love of we were both theater kids, and we both liked, you know, performing and acting. And we, you know, he was a good hang, you know? He was a good hang, and I think I was a good hang at that time, too. We could hang out and have a good time, and we could sit down and have good conversations. It wasn't until later in life that we became kind of ideologically divided, and every time we would get together or we would kind of press each other on these different issues, we would always try to land on, well, hey, we still have the foundation of our friendship. That dissolved recently when I reached out to him and I sent him the clip of Elon Musk. It was on the day that it happened, and I said, I need you to tell me this is what it is. I need you to not give me a line of bullshit, just own that this is what it is. I need to know that you can do that. And he responded to me and was like, dude, what are you talking about? He's like, dude, he's autistic. I have an autistic son and he does all kinds of weird stuff. He's not a Nazi. And I just was like, bro. And it led to this really bad conversation between us where, like, I was angry. I was furious with this guy because I was like, you have to be able to just say what is objectively true here. I just need you to be able to accept the objectively irrefutable evidence of your own eyes. I need you to be able to be honest about this. And he was just like, he was unwilling to do it. And I said, okay, well, then I can't be your friend anymore, because I can't be friends with a Nazi apologist, because a Nazi apologist is a Nazi. Like, that's all that means. And, like, I can't have space for you in my life if that's the case. And his response to me was, his substantive refutation was not to try to, like, you know, I mean, he did try to explain that it was anything but what it was. But then he went, you're really going down a bad path here, bud. I mean, look at our two lives. Look at my life and look at your life. And what he meant by that was, he's married and has, like, 8 kids. I don't know how many fucking kids he has, but he lives in a giant mansion and he has a job where he makes, like, $600,000 a year. I know that because he's told me the amount of money that he makes several times over the years. And he was like, look at my life and look at your life. And, like, which, you know, what do you think is, like, so his evidence for why I was wrong and he was right was that his life seems materially better than mine. Again, we go back to Frank Grimes and Homer Simpson. Like, Homer Simpson must be right because Homer's got the house and the family and the cars and the yard and the friends, while Frank Grimes has the sad apartment between the bowling alleys. And what he was saying here was, look at our two lives. I live in a mansion and make a ton of money and I'm married and I've got a family. You don't have a family. You've never been married and you live in a one-bedroom apartment by yourself. Who do you think is more right here? This is not a substantive argument. This is a logically fallacious argument on every level. In no way does this disprove the validity of my political ideology. All he's doing is making a personal attack. He's just saying your life is materially worse than mine and making, you know, his own kind of judgment about that. I would not actually trade my life for his. I'm happy I have the life that I have. I like my life. But his assessment was, you have less material worth than me, therefore my arguments are automatically better. But I feel like way too many of us in our society operate through this lens, where it's just sort of like, well, I don't know, like, if Joe Rogan's so stupid, then how come Spotify bought his podcast for tens of millions of dollars? How come he's a multimillionaire and you're not? If Elon Musk is really so stupid, how come he has $400 billion? I don't know. I think it takes a pretty low level of emotional intelligence and just general intelligence to hoard that amount of wealth and not see anything wrong with it. I think that's a sign of low intelligence personally. But a lot of people think that just based on the general vibe of, like, I don't know, if you've got a lot of money, you must be smart. I feel like I want to somehow get back to a framework where substantive arguments matter, where it matters what the substance of someone's position is. Okay, this is probably going to be a very jolting transition. If you're just listening to the audio version of this episode of the podcast, then you probably have no idea what I'm talking about right now. But if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll notice that all of a sudden, my clothes are different and the lighting behind me is different. It's actually several weeks later after I initially filmed this episode of the podcast, and I haven't been able to finish the edit, and I haven't been able to release it because I don't like the back half of it. I kind of just go off the rails and just meander for like the last 30 minutes of the show because, as I've stated multiple times throughout the first half of the show, I don't have an answer for this problem. I'm just sort of stating something, an observation about the world, about our culture that I've noticed, putting it out there, expressing my frustration, and saying multiple times, I don't have the fix for this. But then in the back half, I sort of spin my wheels trying to find somewhere to land, trying to find a solution. And I think in the few weeks since I first recorded that, I have found a better landing spot. And that's just to embrace the fact that I don't have a solution for this. That's just to embrace a more clear version of what it is I'm trying to say with all of this. Like, why do I care about this? Because what it sounds like right now, I feel like up to this point in the show, it just sounds like I'm complaining that certain content creators are more popular than me. That there's just art that people make that is consumed at a higher rate than the stuff that I make. And I just wish that more people cared about what I do. And it sounds like a really personal, petty gripe that I have. And I'm not going to lie, that's obviously baked into it. There is a part of this that where my ego is just like, why don't people value something like what I do? Something that I think has a little more authenticity and a little more honesty to it. That's in there. But I am more concerned about this on a macro level, on a societal level, on a cultural level, because while I don't have a solution for it, I do think I've seen why specifically this is a societal problem that we should all give a shit about. I want to talk a little bit more about this idea of people thinking that you've automatically lost a debate if your vibes are off or if you're a little bit too emotionally charged. Immediately after I recorded this, I watched this clip from The Problem with Jon Stewart, and it's a clip that I've seen before. Jon Stewart was interviewing a senator from Oklahoma named Nathan Dahm, D-A-H-M, Dahm, 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 I'm going to say Dahm, and they're talking about, you know, sort of the legislation that this senator has written in his career and how he's been very vocal and active about, you know, making sure that they're banning drag shows and things like that and making sure kids don't learn about the existence of queer people and protecting kids from queer people. And they have this exchange.
Further, you want to ban drag show readings to children.
To minors, yes.
Why?
Why?
What are you protecting?
Why can we prohibit children from voting, those under 18 from voting?
Why are you banning that? Is that free speech? Are you infringing on that performer's free speech?
They can continue to exercise their free speech, just not in front of a child.
Why?
Because the government does have a responsibility to protect.
I'm sorry?
The government does have a responsibility in certain instances to protect
children. What's the leading cause of death amongst children in this country? And I'm going to give you a hint. It's not drag show readings to children.
Correct, yes.
So what is it?
I'm presuming you're going to say it's firearms.
No, I'm not going to say it like it's an opinion. That's what it is. It's firearms. More than cancer, more than car accidents. And what you're telling me is you don't mind infringing free speech to protect children from this amorphous thing that you think of. But when it comes to children that have died, you don't give a flying fuck to stop that because that shall not be infringed.
What's interesting about this clip is when I watch it, and I'm sure when the people in my audience watch it or listen to it, you can hear or see clearly that Jon Stewart is winning the argument. Just because Jon Stewart's voice is elevated, just because he gets more emotionally, you know, passionate during his presentation of his point of view and his perspective, doesn't mean that he's lost the argument at all. He is absolutely trouncing this man and embarrassing this this man and humiliating this man. So it's not that I think that the audience watches this and goes, whoa, John really lost his cool. He really lost that argument. The other guy really remained calm. What I noticed, though, in this clip that I think is important to focus on is, and you're going to have to kind of watch the visual version if you want to see this. You have to watch the actual video on YouTube. But the way that Nathan Dom's face looks the second John Stewart starts raising his voice and swearing at him, and, you know, it's like the moment John Stewart goes from a guy who has invited him to have a nice, cordial conversation, respectful conversation on his show, to a guy who is actively yelling at him and saying, what the fuck are you talking about? No, I'm not. It's not just me saying it. That is the stat. That is what it is. And you have the job where you could do something about it, but instead you're doing something about a fake issue of, you know, kids being a fake threat being posed to kids in the form of drag shows. No kid has ever been hurt at a drag show, but kids are being killed in terrifyingly large numbers at school, and you could do something about that. And instead, not only do you not do anything about that, but you actively support legislation that actually makes that problem worse. And when John Stewart starts raising his voice and attacking this man, you see this guy totally shut down. It's like, and I've seen that look, the look on his face, I've seen it before when I've been talking to people where I know that they are now disengaging. This man stops listening, and in his mind, he thinks, wow, I agreed to come on this show in good faith. I agreed to come on and have a respectful back and forth with Jon Stewart, and now he's just yelling at me. Not only is he yelling at me, he's swearing at me. That's the part that really triggered me, because I grew up in Utah, and I know what it looks like when an adult shuts down because you use a cuss word, and that drives me nuts, that it's like, the validity of what I'm saying is not undone by the fact that I said the F word, but I've seen that look on adults' faces who I'm trying to talk to, that I get passionate, I drop an F-bomb, and I see the light leave their eyes like, wow, well, I'm out of this conversation. And I just think that it speaks to an intellectual and emotional stuntedness, a stuckness that we have en masse in society and in our culture, that we cannot deal with reality. We cannot deal with the truth, because that's what I actually mean in this entire conversation when I keep using the word substance, when I say, you know, substantive arguments and substantive content, substantive media, substantive art. What I'm talking about is truthful content, truthful media, truthful art, art that is honest, messaging that is honest, something that is getting to the core of what is true about our experience. Because I think that the truth makes a lot of us uncomfortable, and we'd rather just not deal with it. We'd rather just not have to look at it. We can talk about the truth of things that are easy to talk about, things that are easy to digest, but anything that is difficult, we'd rather not deal with. And that's sort of where the vibes over substance thing starts to dominate our culture. I started watching the documentary series The Fall of Diddy on Max, and my takeaway from this series was, this is another vibes over substance story, because my whole life, Sean Puffy Combs was famous. My whole life, I grew up in the 90s, and my whole life, he was a figure on MTV, you know, the show Making the Band, and all of these different things that he did, you know, dating J-Lo, and he was always sort of just this figure of, like, coolness. And watching this documentary, trying to understand what it was that actually made him special, what made him the figure that he was in pop culture, I'm sort of blown away by how remarkably normal and ordinary he actually is. All Sean Combs is a man who was able to convince the right people that he was cool. And once the right people were like, this kid is cool, whatever, this kid's got the swag, this kid's got the right vibes, whatever that is, this kid's got it, that he was just bringing in energy to, like, business meetings and bringing in energy to meetups where people with money said, we want that. Very similarly to the way that these kind of, you know, corporate music machines would put together boy bands, those same brains are the kind of brains that find a guy like Sean Combs and go, you've got the right energy, whatever it is. And then once everyone buys into this sort of collective delusion of this man's coolness, then he gets to sort of set the tone of what is cool, what's in, what's out, like what is good, what is bad in music, who gets to have a shot and who doesn't. And everyone starts sucking up to this guy. And what his story ultimately is, what his empire is about, is unaddressed trauma. Like, that's what is underneath all of the cool vibes from Sean Puffy P. Diddy Combs, is a kid whose dad was murdered when he was too young to remember him, and who grew up with a physically abusive mother, and who grew up trying to impress his neighbors, and like be like, all he knew was, I gotta figure out how to be cool. And what didn't factor into I gotta figure out how to be cool is addressing any of his foundational trauma. So every time his trauma would find a way out, because trauma will always find a way out, it will always come out in some kind of sideways, messed up, unhealthy expression. Every time it would come out, he would just bury it under more and more, I gotta look cool, I gotta come out on top of this visually. The optics have to be good. Even after he got, you know, he skated after shooting a woman in the face in a club, something he actually did, and then he pinned it on another guy, a younger guy who was following him because Sean Combs was saying he'd give him a shot in the music industry. But he pinned it on this other guy, but he knew the optics had to be good for him. So that's when he started doing all of his charity work and stuff. And he started doing stuff that looked like it had some substance to it. But again, it was always about optics with this guy. It was always about creating a public image of, even though I'm the coolest guy in the world, I'm still a philanthropist, I still care about people, I care about causes. But what was really driving all of this is just the fact that the man was not willing to address his own demons, his own shortcomings, his own behaviors, because he wasn't able to address truths that were uncomfortable. He wasn't able to just be honest in a way that maybe wasn't cool, you know, like, in order to actually do the work that he needed to do to stop terrorizing the people in his life, he would have had to have gone into some spaces that are vulnerable. Because that's sort of like what cool is, right? Cool is all about hiding and masking vulnerability. It's all about hiding and masking authenticity and uniqueness and your unique voice. I saw this post on Instagram recently, and I'm going to butcher the quote, but it was this fashion designer talking about how cool has sort of ruined fashion, how the aspiration to be cool has sort of ruined fashion as an art form, because everyone is chasing this thing that cool by definition is sort of nonchalant. It's like, you've got it or you don't have it. So everyone has to pretend like they're not trying. And then trying becomes cringe, and cringe is the enemy of cool. But trying to look good, trying to wear clothes or mix patterns or do something with your fashion that is expressing something honest about yourself becomes cringe, because it's try hard, and try hard is not cool. It's not nonchalant. It's the opposite. It is very chalant to try. And so, you know, this fashion designer was basically talking about how we've been deprived of generations of potentially really big, loud, interesting, unique voices in fashion, because it's been replaced with people who are just chasing the idea of cool. And cool is usually about, like, paring back and making it simple. Think about, you know, the movement in architecture, both public architecture and, you know, private architecture and, like, the housing market, toward minimalism and simplifying everything, because that became what's cool. Is like, don't have a personal expression with your house. Keep it cool. The millennial gray that everyone talks about, these sort of gray washed out living rooms that millennials live in, and everything needs to be this sort of gray tile and gray gradients on the counters and gray couches and gray beds. No one wants to, it's cringe to have a house with color, to have a living space with color, to have a living space that is a little bit maximalist, that has lots of things going on, lots of different art on styles of art on the wall. If you're going to have art on your walls, it should all be uniform and one style, because that's cool. It looks like you picked one thing and went with that because it worked, and you know it works because you're cool. And again, all of this is just sort of the fear of authenticity, the fear of one's own personal authenticity, and really at the core of that is the fear of vulnerability, of being truly seen in all of your flaws, to be seen as a person who, yeah, I lose my cool sometimes. Sometimes I get passionate about things and I yell. Sometimes I want to dress in loud colors. Sometimes I want to take risks with my fashion that I don't know if they're going to work out. I just kept coming back to this idea that, like, while I don't know what the solution is, I do know why it's a problem. Because when we are running from vulnerability, running from authenticity, running from truth, that's when we are vulnerable to do the most harm. I'm not saying that everybody that hides from truth or that chases after the idea of being cool is going to turn into a Sean Combs level monster, but I am saying that that seems to be kind of the disturbing trend of the people that we flock around, right? Is that so often we keep seeing that the coolest people in society, the people who are setting the tone for what is cool, for what vibes are chill, for who's got the best aura, those people wind up being some of the most troubled and disturbed people who are doing the most harm. And even the people who listen to them, the people who kind of get their information and set their worldview by them are the people who are doing the most harm. The guy that Jon Stewart was talking to in that interview, by just nature of being a person who's like, well, I believe it's bad manners to yell if you're passionate about something or to use swear words. That's a guy who is doing active harm, massive harm on a major level to society because he probably has all kinds of things, uncomfortable truths about himself that he's not willing to examine. All kinds of things that he's just in his adult life has not been willing to look at. And I think that when we do this, both on an internal level personally, and when we do it on a macro cultural level, when we make the ideal cool vibes, good, like, you know, chill over substance. And look, substance can be cool. Sometimes the truth is cool. Sometimes honesty is cool. Sometimes facts and logic can be chill and cool too. But sometimes the truth is not cool. Really not cool. Sometimes the truth is a terminal diagnosis. Sometimes the truth is we have to break up. This relationship has reached its ending point and we need to go our separate ways. Sometimes the truth is we're not friends anymore. This is the end of our friendship. We've had a friendship for this many years and we're not friends anymore. Sometimes the truth is I don't know if I can speak to this family member anymore. Sometimes the truth is in order to heal, I'm going to need to be honest about this abuse that took place. And I'm going to have to be able to speak openly and honestly and clearly about it, whether it's abuse that you experienced or abuse that you perpetrated. You know, sometimes dealing with what is real, what is substantive, what is true, what is honest is not the coolest or chillest vibe. It's not the kind of thing that would make a great episode of The Simpsons, but it's necessary in order for us to be healthy as a species. Because in order for you to be healthy as an individual, you need to be able to be vulnerable and honest, and you need to be able to look at the things that you do not want to look at. And in order for us to be collectively healthy as a society and as a culture, we also need to be able to look at those things. And that's sort of the landing spot that I think I'm now at with this whole thing. That's why I wanted to talk about this. I was trying to find it when I initially recorded it. I couldn't quite find it. I think I finally got there in a way that is a little more, I at least understand it a little bit better. Again, I'm not solving the issue. I don't have the answer to how we get society to collectively want to be more vulnerable, to collectively want to be more honest and want to deal in what's real more. I don't know how to do that, but I do think that I can at least point to examples of why it's a big problem when we don't do that. Like, when we don't do that, we get Trump. When we don't do that, when collectively society does not want to go to fucking therapy and look at what's true, you get Elon Musk. That's what happens. That's the result of not wanting to take our medicine and deal with reality, deal with what's true, what's honest, what's substantive. I think I'm going to leave it there. This was, you know, an interesting conversation, an interesting return to the podcast. I'm not sure how I did. I kind of feel a little bit crazy right now, and that's sort of why I haven't been making episodes of the podcast, because I feel like I don't know if I'm in a state where I can speak in a cogent or clear way. I'll go back through and I'll watch it and I'll see how I did. You know, I don't know. Thank you to the TikTok Digital Studio audience for your feedback and for your comments. They really helped out, and you had a lot of valuable and interesting feedback. If you would like a full unedited version of this episode, you can check it out on patreon.com/AustinArcher. That will have everything. It'll be a longer version of the episode if you are into that sort of thing. Shout out to the Patreon patrons. Love you so much. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music at austin-archer.com or by looking up Austin Archer wherever you stream music. Did you know that I make music? So many people are always like, I didn't know you had a podcast. I didn't know you had a YouTube channel. I didn't know you make music. I do make music. I also direct and choreograph really awesome music videos, and you can watch those. I'll link some of them in the description of this video. I just finished one that's coming out soon that's also really cool. I make music, dude, and I think it's pretty good music. Go check it out. Go listen to it. You know, check out the Patreon. I think that's everything. I think that's everything for this episode. Thanks so much for being here. Until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Love you so much. Bye-bye.